You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
All right, welcome everybody to the Fantastic Voyage. I'm the captain of this vessel, first mate Chris Johnson. I'm Marcus Johnson. We're pleased to be joined by Chris Haynes, NBA insider extraordinaire. And Chris Johnson, you're telling me that Chris Haynes, they got a little bit of game?
Big game, not just a little bit.
Who does this game remind you of when you watch it videos?
Oh man, let me see. He kind of nice with it, like a
Kidney Animal Bannister.
Lindsey Hunter.
Ken Bannister with the
with the face. Hey, Ken Bannister had the face growing out.
He had the face for a second face growing. I'm trying to get a visualization here, man.
I'm
telling you, Lindsey Hunter, dog. I'm gonna give him Lindsey, dog.
Lindsey Hunter. Jackson State.
Hey, Chris got a bad
strong
jumper.
Okay.
Chris will boom on you. Okay.
I still at 43. I still get up there. Slam it down. I see MJ every birthday. He still can you still do it? Man, are you doing it next birthday?
Josiah's dragging me out in a couple of days. I just talked to him this morning. He's like, "Yeah, we go do it. Then I'll take you out to lunch for your birthday and all that." if you do it, can you? You know. So we shall see, man. I've got an adjustable rim, so that's all good. Life is good.
Anyway, that's what's up. Hold on. Before we get into this,
yes.
If anybody was able to evaluate my game, I would have said that MJ would have had the inside track. And the reason why I say this is because I look back. Chris, I don't know if you know this, man. I sent this to our producer, Monis, this picture. I'm from Fresno, California.
Okay.
And
yeah, we know that.
We used to have for a few years, we used to have this camp called the B of A camp, which is the Bank of America camp.
Oh, yeah, I got the picture.
Olden Pawnees would come to town put these camps together. And so my team that, they separate kids in, I was a sophomore in high school. They separate kids in tens. This like camp, probably 75 kids, maybe more than that.
Yeah.
And I so happened, one of my friends that was at this camp, he sent me this picture. I've never seen this picture until late last year.
Wow.
And I seen this picture, and it's a picture of me with my friend in there. Yeah. But right behind me in this picture is your very own Marcus Johnson.
Yeah.
Behind. So I had no clue. I'm a sophomore back then. I had no clue who he was at the time. But then right next to him is Olden Pawnees. And then I'm trying to think, man. We had some ballers in that. And another guy away from me, his name is Jason Pondexter. He's actually Quincy Pondexter's brother who played in the NBA.
Okay.
And so, man, that was just small world, man.
Yeah.
Very small world.
Yeah, so B of A camps, that was Chris, Jim Marsh. You worked a couple of those.
Yeah, I was a counselor.
Back, hooked it up. Yeah,
Is that right?
Jim Marsh got us at Seattle. I met him in my Sonic days, but he hooked it up, and man, they used to pay like two grand a camp.
I was getting 500. Hey, I was 19, getting 500.
That's why I was in Fresno. I was down in Petaluma, wherever they asked me to come, I was there. But yeah, that was a great picture. I did get that picture, man.
That was dope, man.
Yeah, it was, man. It brought back some great memories. So that's special that we crossed paths back then. And speaking of crossing paths, man, let's jump right into it, man. The guy that you crossed paths with, and I love your story. We had you on. You were one of our first guests on the podcast, and then just to hear you talk about how you became who you finally became, eventually became, and how you were just writing and put together pieces, and then somebody told you you need to move to an NBA city, so you wind up moving to Portland. Just a cold call, move to Portland, see what would happen. Started writing about the Blazers, got a press pass, press credential. Boom, start covering the team. Then became close with Damian Lillard. And so now you've got a project that you're working on. Talk about that project.
This year, I was like, I need to impose myself more on this team.
One of the most elite closers, clutch players in our league.
For the arc, moves to his right, puts up a
It's uncanny how many times he makes good shots.
James is incredibly intelligent, calculated, and specific in
tactics. He's just a bona fide scorer.
How would you describe his legacy if somebody asked him?
He is as clutch of a player to ever play basketball.
Dame is, he's a unique individual from the standpoint that he's had a career where he's been stable for quite some time, over a decade. And then out of that has come a trade. Then also he had some personal things he was dealing with. You know, he talked about his divorce. And so we got a little bit more deep on just who is Dame. We talked to a lot of people associated with him who had a role to play in his upbringing. He was not a high caliber player coming out of high school. He was not a high caliber player his first couple of years of college. And then, you know, things just turned into a different direction. So we went deep in this documentary, talked to a lot of people in this doc. And I think, you know, I'm proud of what I've seen thus far, and I'm looking forward to when the episode one drops.
Now, Chris, it's a 4-part series, correct?
Correct.
Now, what's inspired you to like dive deep into the background of Dame?
I think too often, you know, as you guys know as well, you know, you guys have relationships with a lot of players and markets, a lot of relationships with a lot of players, former players and coaches and former coaches, and you know them like nobody else. And so when it comes to doing a project like this, where, you know, especially with social media and everything, people really think they know an athlete, know a coach, know a subject, but they really don't. And I think who better to tell the story of Damian Lillard than someone who's been covering him since his senior year in college leading up to the NBA. And, you know, he's someone who, you know, I'm being honest, you know, I consider a brother to me. And so, you know, there's no secret. We've developed a great relationship over our time. It seemed like, and I credit him a large part of my success. Cause, you know, as a beat writer, you're only as popular as the subjects that you cover. And I remember when I was in Portland, you know, you had the Brandon Roys, you had LaMarcus Aldridge, but you never had anyone who had national commercials and I remember Dame's second year in the league. And this is when I really saw the difference. His second year in the league, he made the All-Star team, but he was the first person in history to make the All-Star team, agree to do the rookie game, agreed to do the skills challenge, agreed to do the 3-point contest, and it was one more. It was five. I can't remember what that fifth one. Oh, the dunk. I said dunk contest, 3-point contest, all that skills.
He did the dunk contest.
Well. Yeah, okay. He did his second year. Yeah. Okay. So y'all don't remember that. Yeah, he did it.
Hey! Badly.
He was in the dunk contest. And I remember when that came out, like when I broke that story, making history, competing in all five events has never been done. Yeah. That still hasn't been done to this day. And I just remember like my profile just kind of shot up. And so I owe a lot to him. And you know, I'm very appreciative of him. So anyways, to answer your question, I just felt like, you know, what better person to tell his story? Because there's a lot of things out there that people don't know about. And I was glad that Dame shared that in this project.
So his rap persona, Dame Dollar, is that an alter ego with him, is it pretty much, did he look at it like a separate kind of identity where he's able to express parts of his personality and who he is, or is it all kind of integrated into one?
It's integrated in one, but at the same time, it is a separate. I would say it's a separate identity because he does go back. Andrew, let me tell you about Dame. So, you know, and it's interesting. It's fun covering guys from when they become rookies to established vets because I remember his first year. It was his rookie season. And remember, we're still talking and trying to get to know each other. I'm trying to get to know him as a player and a person.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're sitting. I forgot where we're sitting at. We're in an arena somewhere, a shoot-around. We're just sitting in an empty arena. And he was like, bro, you know I can rap. He said, you know I can rap. Rookie year. And I told him, I said, bro, leave that alone. I said, leave that alone. So, I said, just hoop. I just dismissed him. And he got offended.
Yes.
He was like, bro, I really do this. Like, I saw a look in his face, and I was like, oh, he's serious. Okay. I'm like, well, I don't want to disrespect him, but you know what I mean? That just didn't, you know, we've been there. We've done that. We've seen that. You know what I mean? Shaq probably was the only successful NBA player that turned rapper. You know, he had projects with Biggie and everything. So I dismissed him. And, you know, he starts sending me some cuts, and I'm like, okay, he really can get down. Then he took it seriously. But that is a side of him that, you know, he considers himself a professional in that lane as well. And he, you know, he's done projects with Lil Wayne, Too Short, and, you know, list goes on and on and on. And you know, they wouldn't mess with him if he didn't have the skill set to jump on those tracks. So, he does view that as a different side of him, for sure.
As his producer, whoever puts together his music is just on another level. I mean, that's the thing. I love that kind of, for lack of a better word, kind of the mellow rap, not all the frenetic, but it's a nice mellow groove that he kind of raps to. Is it somebody that he's been with for a while that has been involved with him musically in terms of putting the production element together?
Shout out to Nate. Nate, he's a producer in L.A. Shout out to Nate. And I actually got the chance, man, this was probably like 6 years ago, 6 or 7 years ago. I hung out with Dame in the studio because I've never, you know, I consider myself a hip hop aficionado, but I've never been in the studio to see how this process works. And so Dame was in L.A. and the way he did it, Dame was in L.A. and the producer, Nate, he was just playing a bunch of beats. So we're all in the studio. And I'm just observing. They're all in the studio, and Nate is just, you know, going to different beats. Play it for like 30 seconds. Dame, like, I'm not feeling it. This goes on for hours. And this, again, I don't know if his process is the same now, but this is about 7 years ago. He probably did one song that day. It just took all that time to, like, find the right beat. But during that process, during that time, Too Short came by.
Uh-oh.
Too Short came by.
Hold it on. Blow the whistle.
Hold the whistle. Okay.
Blow the whistle.
Feeling. All right.
Too Short is like, we know Too Short from, you know, Too Short. I think nationally Too Short is known as an underground rapper. He's like your rapper's favorite rapper. But that Blow the Whistle came out when he got with Lil Jon.
Come on.
Took like E-40 the same way. When they got with Lil Jon. Snap your fingers and all that, but that was that Too Short. So I'm like, man, what's going to happen? Like, what's going on? So I'm like, am I going to witness like Too Short jumping on the track? And so Too Short came in, and the same process. They're playing music, and they didn't do anything that day. I end up leaving because I was just tired of just listening to different tracks and them not agreeing to anything. So that was just the process that day. But then when I left, I found out Kendrick Lamar came through.
Wow.
K-Dot.
K-Dot came through after I left.
I know you was heated.
Come on, bro.
How long ago was that? How many?
This is like 7 years ago.
Yeah. So, okay. So Kendrick probably had his, I was jealous of Aaron Aflalo. I used to be jealous of Aaron Aflalo. I loved it. That's like one of the coldest opening rhymes in a rap song I've ever. I used to be jealous of Aaron Aflalo. Like,
wow. That's sick, MJ. That's a sick pull.
Man.
What?
Man. Come on, man. Yep. But yeah, no, that was good. Like that. That's something he takes seriously. But as you've seen, you know, since he's come to Milwaukee, like he's all in on trying to make this thing work, trying to maximize this opportunity that he has in Milwaukee. So he hasn't recorded not any new albums. But if they do win the chip, Giannis has already confirmed and told him, like, he's jumping on the track. If they play it together.
Okay.
You heard it here first. You heard it here first.
I said it.
Yes, I'm going to rap with Dan.
Come on.
Yes.
Come on, DMJ.
Your cousin by marriage. Now, I did mention to Mariah on a recent road trip that her and the kids were on, and I won't get specific with that, but I was like, yeah, you know, I had a chance to talk to your cousin, you know, from France. She's like, who? I was like, Chris Hayes. So she was like, yeah, that side of the family. What's going on?
What's up with that, Chris?
We got the Johnson side, that is educators and doctors and teachers and professors. Then on my side, we got the Kazees. And the Kazees are off. Are y'all like the Kazees? Is that like the Kazees side of the dynamic in that family?
Yeah, that's pretty safe to say. Yeah. That's pretty safe to say.
That's all. I just, when she said that, she didn't say anything negative.
I can imagine.
All smiles. I don't take it personal.
I understand.
Yeah, it's all good. So back to Dame. And you talked about winning a chip with Giannis and winning a chip, that chip thing used to bug me, but whatever, that's just me and my old school thinking. But winning a chip with Giannis, how much closer do you think they are to just reaching their potential? Let me put it that way. Not so much winning a chip, but just maximizing the duel. This year's a lot better, right? I mean, Dame's mindset. I mean, what are you sensing from that whole thing?
I think those two together are playing better than they have at any point since they've paired together. You know, the pick and roll action. You see in Giannis advance the ball up a little bit more. You see in Dame looking for Giannis almost every opportunity in transition, letting him go, you know, get downhill. So, you know, there's the camaraderie is there. And but I think, you know, the sad part is that, you know, no matter how well those two play, it's still a team game, and it's going to take the collective to accomplish the ultimate goal. But those two, they're playing really good. It just took a while. And you can see that they've been in the lab together and they've been trying to get together. And, you know, they're really good on and off the court right now as far as, like, communicating and trying to understand what each other can do for the other person and for everybody else. So that part is good.
You know, what really gave me insights into Dame and his toughness and kind of who he is, I got a best friend of mine since the seventh grade at Audubon Junior High School here. Audubon is I always tease this guy, James Harden, is the second greatest player to come out of Audubon. I was the first.
Used to be. Y'all heard that on the broadcast. You said that a time or two in the broadcast.
He gets a kick out of that. But Butch Johnson of the Dallas Cowboys, Wendell Tyler, the football great of the Rams, Super Bowl, UCLA, just a lot of great, great athletes. So George Arneberry, seventh grade best friend, he's been a teacher at Castlemont High School for 20 years, taught all of Dame's cousins and nieces and I think a young lady who used to live with him in Portland, she was in his class. But he told me about Brookfield. He talked about that section of East Oakland. Yeah. Have you been there? Have you seen that? Can you just give us a brief description of what it's like and just how remarkable it is to watch a young man like Dame kind of rise above whatever was going on?
Yeah, no, I've been there multiple times. The first time I've been there is probably maybe Dame's second or third season in the league. He would do an annual Brookfield barbecue at the park down there. It's like one of the biggest parks there in Brookfield, where he would give out haircuts and, you know, he'll have barbers there giving out haircuts, backpacks. And one thing I'm telling you guys right now, man, what made me fall in love with Dame's family, they love to cook. Oh God, they love to cook. Oh, and they're so, like, he has a big, huge family, and they do it big. And I'm big on, probably told you guys, like, I'm big on smoking my ribs, smoking my chicken, barbecue. I love barbecue. That's what they do. His Uncle Oscar, Big O. Oh my goodness, man! You got to follow him on Instagram, man. Look at the food, man. It's crazy. But when I went to Brookfield for the first time, I've never been there before. You know, I really never even heard of Brookfield until Dame. I just know Oakland. I got family in Oakland, but I didn't know, Brookfield of Oakland. Yeah, the section. So when I went, you know, it's rough. It's definitely rough. you know, I felt okay because I was around his people. You know what I mean? And when I say his people, his dad, Houston, like, if you talk to people in Oakland about Houston, Houston Lillard Sr., oh my goodness, the stories, the stories like that. He should get his own documentary in itself. But one thing about Brookfield people, man, is that it's a small community. They know each other, but they all pull for each other. They ride and die for each other. Like, that's what I seen. That's what I noticed. And when Dame would come back, man, it was all love. You know, obviously, you got persons of, you know, I could speak to it in Fresno, where that's my hometown. But I don't necessarily let people know I'm coming to town when I do come. You know what I mean? And I know LA has its own stigma as well, as far as, you know, not really getting that hometown love. But in Brookfield, it's different, man. It's a different breed. And it's probably like that in Oakland as well, as a whole. But it's just a tight-knit, small community that they ride for each other. And most importantly, with Dane's family, they love to cook. And I love that.
So let's talk about the NBA. 63 players moved during this last trading period, man. What the hell is going on? Is it the second apron? I mean, I'm sure it's a combination of things, but is there something else that you're seeing why so much movement happened like it did?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'll say this. I didn't think we would come anywhere close to that number due to the new CBA restrictions. So I was expecting a very light trade deadline. The answer to your question, I don't know if this is the answer, but, you know, Luka getting traded like that definitely opened up the floodgates. You know, you think of, it was a funny, one of my homies, you know, we in this text chain, and Luka got traded on a Saturday, and I believe the Sixers were playing the next day, but Luka got traded on a Saturday, then Joel Embiid was available the next day. And one of my homies was like, look what this trade has done. Now players is like, anybody can get traded. Let me get out of this court. You know, so I think that definitely spearheaded a lot of things. It definitely, you know, for teams like Miami and Phoenix, who we knew they were trying to get a Jimmy Butler deal done for the longest, it kind of derailed a lot of teams' plans. And so it was, I think it just opened up the floodgates. I did not expect this. This was the heck. I right when the trade deadline was over, I was doing a trade deadline special for NBA TV. And I was on air for like 4 hours. And then an hour after the trade deadline had passed for, you know, post-game reaction. And I kid you not, I went to my hotel right after, and I just passed out. And I could not remember covering a flurry of transactions like that in such a short amount of time. Like, that was one for the ages for sure.
Chris, what was your process like? Because the Luka deal just took everybody by storm. You saw, like, Shams, and people was, like, doubting the validity of it. No one could believe it, basically. So what was your process kind of behind the scenes confirming that?
I was watching it was Saturday night. I was watching the Vince McMahon documentary. I don't know if you guys have seen that, but I'm a big wrestling fan going back from the 80s and 90s. Not so much now, but, you know, my childhood growing up.
WWF.
When it was WWF.
Yes, sir.
Yes. Okay.
Yes, sir.
So I was
watching
that, and I'm at the last 20 minutes. I binge watched it. So I'm at the last 20 minutes of the final episode. And this is how I found out. I got a call from Rich Paul. Rich Paul calls me and says, hey, the deal is real, and hung up. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
Rich.
Like, what are you talking about? Like, I don't know what he's talking about. So he hangs up. I look at my phone. 3 minutes prior, I got the text that, hey, go with this. I'm not going to say who it's from, but, hey, go with this. Trade Luka to blah, 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 blah. I'm like, whoa, wow. So that's how I found out. It was a call saying it's real. They're just hanging up. And then I had to look at my phone, and I saw 3 minutes earlier I had the information. And so that's how I found out. And
Yeah.
It was a whirlwind from there.
Rich Paul, like, deep throat. They're doing it real. Yeah, that's funny. But Chris, you and Chris Mullin, that was WWF time at the Oakland Coliseum. Who'd y'all get into a fight with?
So, Chris, when I was younger, Pops was playing in Golden State, right? And we were tight with Chris Mullin, Mully. So I used to work out with Mully, and Mully used to do stuff. So Mully took me and my brother Josiah to go see the WWF, who was in town, right? So, you know, we go in there, we backstage, and it was like, you know, Junkyard Dog, the Bushwhackers,
Bobby the Brain.
But look, they trying to sweat us when we rolled up in there, right?
In the locker room.
Because we want to go to the locker room to get the drinks. So, you know, we want to get the Gatorade and some Coke. You know what I'm saying? So Chris Mullin takes us back there. The wrestlers start tripping on us when we got into the locker room. Oh, wow. So ultimately, we almost basically had an all-out brawl with Bobby the Brain. Remember that shady ref, Chris? Danny?
Yeah.
Remember the crooked ref? He was in there. The Bushwhackers tried to check
me. Is that right?
The Bushwhackers tried to check me. Bro, they tried to check me. I was big. Hey, Chris.
You was big. Chris, you was ready.
For 14 years old.
I was ready for the Bushwhackers.
Oh, damn. Yeah, Dad. Me and Chris Mullin, we about to get busy, Dad. I love Chris Mullin. He was about to fight, too. You know,
Mully was like, yo, Mully was going off. It was crazy. Yeah. Wow. It was crazy.
It's crazy. But Chris, one thing. So we talked about the movement. We talked about how, you know, just the flurry of activity. I want your comment on this, because – I was talking to just a casual, what do you guys call them, Chris? Civilian, spectator, whatever kind of fan you guys, Josiah has a casual. Josiah has a name for the casuals out there. But a casual this morning just made an off-the-cuff remark that, yeah, it looks like the players have lost the power once the Luka trade went down. Because of LeBron and the moves he's made over the years, are you one to ascribe to that? Is that a truth that the players had the power and now they've lost it? Or where do you think we are in this kind of player empowerment dynamic right now?
Well, I think what it shows, like, do the players have power? Yes, they've always had power. And we've kind of labeled it over the last 10 years of the player empowerment movement. But the truth of the matter is that ownership and management has always had the power to trade you at any given time.
Yes.
And, you know, it's still, if you're a top 10 player, you know, the odds are still slim that you would be traded in your prime, regardless of if you are somebody who is perceived to not be in the best shape or doesn't work out. Like, if you're a top 10 player, the odds are that they're going to stick by you and try to make this thing work. But unless you have a no trade like a LeBron James or Bradley Beal, you can be sent away. So that's that. But BMJ, one thing I would say about this is that, you know, you got the low management era as well.
Yeah.
And I don't know that we still call it that now. But I know there are former players who I've talked to who are concerned about the future of this league and about the future money that these players will be making or won't be making in the future when it pertains to will we still have guaranteed contracts, you know, in the CBA? Will they get to non-guaranteed? And so I think the players, they owe it to the future of this league to make sure they're doing all that they can to be on the court so that it won't be in a situation where the NBA is treated like the NFL with non-guaranteed contracts. So that is my concern with that, you know. And I mentioned this before, but, you know, I think optics are an issue as well. You know, take Paul George, who has a podcast, and I'm all for players having podcasts. I think Draymond, when he talks the game of basketball, breaks down the game of basketball, I think he's as good as anybody out there. But if you have more podcast episodes than games played that season, I think it looks bad.
Yeah.
I think the optics are just not, like, first and foremost, the team pays you to be the max player that you are. They pay you to be on the court. It just doesn't. And I understand that everybody has different interests. I'm not trying to, you know, say you got to just do this, but the optics just don't look good. And so I think that that has to be, I just think that the players got to do a better job of handling the other curricular activity that they participate in while they are still an NBA player.
Yeah, and the more things change, the more they remain the same. And I'll just leave it with this. I mean, Julius Erving was drafted, or the Bucks had his rights, but he went and signed with Atlanta. The Bucks sued. He couldn't play for Atlanta, but there's no way he was going to play in Milwaukee. He wound up going back to New Jersey, back to the East Coast, back to the New York metropolitan area, or Philly. Philly wound up in Philly with the Sixers. And the Kareem from Milwaukee to L.A., I'm just thinking of – you know, the players have always – Charles Barkley going to – where'd he go to? Hooked up with Akeem and Clyde and –
Houston.
That whole – the players of all – the star players. The players with the clout. Mm-hmm. The players with the resume, you know, have always been able to not dictate but have some semblance of control in terms of where they wind up. So it's not that – this is not something that we've never seen before, is my point, right, I guess.
Right. Hold on, real quick. Y'all can't let me go. I need details on this WWF backstage fight. Hold on. So I'm watching the documentary, and I knew that wrestlers back in the day were, you know, they were told to protect their image, protect their character at all times.
So never
like. Yeah. So, you know, you see Undertaker and wrestlers, they can do podcasts now and they can kind of step out of that character. And I'm in that documentary, it showed me like they were really serious. Like they would walk outside on their off days, still remain in character because it was important to protect that character.
Yeah.
So, Chris, you happen to step into that locker room while they trying to, you know what I mean? You ain't supposed to be back there. They got to protect their character.
Right.
I see why they were so pissed and heated about our presence, me and Joe's presence, because they was trying to get us up out of there. But these dudes was talking. Hey, Chris, they was talking normal. They didn't have that act. They didn't have their character face on. They was their real selves.
Right. And you back there like behind the curtain in the Wizard of Oz and seeing them how they really were. They're like, get your little young behind out. Oh, man. That's funny you say that, man. Well, look, man. Appreciate the time, man, and much success. We'll look forward to seeing the what's the name of the
Haynes Brief.
The Haynes Brief is your pod, right? It's what you're doing.
Sir.
Your own special deal. Sir. Talk about that and talk about the pod, and then we'll
let you
go.
Haynes Brief is a YouTube show that I'm launching relatively soon. You know, I drop Haynes Briefs online where those are just me breaking news and. It's about a minute video clip of me coming in, breaking some news. It's just in a different form opposed to just tweeting out a tweet. And, you know, it's Haynes and it's Haynes Brief. So it's a play on words. It's a brief.
Well, yeah, but how did your people know? How did your people feel about you naming your show after some drawers? Hey, boy, that name is show after some draws. Why you name your show after some draws, baby?
Don't get me wrong. I've had some distractors. Don't get me wrong.
It's all good.
You know, it's my name. It's my last name, and it's a brief.
Right.
It's a brief video.
It's catchy.
You know, it's catchy. So you know,
I'm running with it until it's catchy.
Hey, it reminds me. Y'all remember Coming to America? You know, every time I'm trying to explain this, I'm like, you know, Haynes is my last name. I feel like McDowell when he's trying to explain. So it's McDonald's. It's McDonald's and it's McDowell's.
Right.
They have the golden arches.
Right.
My arches aren't golden.
We just leave off the sesame seed off the bun. And that way, two all beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese on a wheat bun. We good. Yeah, no, that's great, man. Look, man.
Oh, man.
Love your work, man. I know this is going to be off the hook, man. I can't wait to see it. And I love everything you do, man. We appreciate the time you spent with us here on the Here District, man. Chris Haynes, thank you so much, man. We appreciate you, guys.
Y'all take care.
From the biggest plays on the court to the comments made in the locker room after, an in-depth recap of every Bucks game in 6 minutes. No more, no less. Bucks in Six provides game recaps for every game. Hear the high-flying dunks from Giannis.
Puts it on the floor, spins down the lane, and plunges it through.
Or the deep threes from Dame.
Dame time has arrived with 107.
Bucks in Six on the Bucks Plus Audio Network. Find it now on Bucks.com/plus or on Spotify, Apple, and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to a Bucks Plus Audio production.
Well, man, Chris Haynes, man, we thank him so much, Chris, for coming by the show here, District.
That was dope. I'm
a captain of this vessel, Marcus Johnson, Chris Johnson, my first mate, and the only father and son tandem. I left this off at the beginning, so I got to say it, to win a national championship at the same school, UCLA, 1995-1975, and there's an event happening in March. Hopefully I'll be able to make it. I hope so, bro. Celebrating the 50th anniversary of the last championship of John Wooden. They got a 65 team and will be celebrating the 60th anniversary. And then you guys, your team, Chris, will be celebrating the 30th year since Jim Herrick took that Ed O'Bannon, Charles O'Bannon, Toby Bailey. Led squad, George Zedek, Big Z, Tyus Etney. Oh, man. Who'd y'all play in the semis? You played
Oklahoma State.
Big Country Reeves.
Country Bryant Reeves.
Yeah,
baby.
I remember me and my workout guy, my training partner, Malik Mansour, we took George Zedek aside after practice and showed him how to shade Bryant Big Country Reeves to the baseline when he's on the left box so he didn't get to that right hand.
And you guys did a great job at that because we executed that game plan to the T.
Yeah, I know Coach Eric's a little salty. What the hell are you trying to – what are they doing over there, Lorenzo? Yeah, he's like, it's okay, Coach. Just try. It's okay. They know what they're talking about. but it worked out. It worked out. And so speaking of basketball and evaluations and analysis, we're going to look at a couple of players here. But before we do, Chris, tell the people where they can kind of – send us some feedback, encouragement, all that good stuff.
Yeah, well, the podcast, we're on YouTube at the Milwaukee Bucks official YouTube channel. We actually have a playlist called Bucks Plus Audio, where there's tons of our episodes and some shorts in there as far as content. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, and wherever else you get your podcasts. Please give us a like, a share, throw some comments in there. We appreciate it. We want to engage and continue to build the Here District community.
So that's the thing now. So they just kind of an abbreviated kind of snippets and highlights and you know, that's kind
of the reels, the quick reels where we got a nice sound bite of something they're doing. And Dylan Moniz, they're doing a great job of cutting up stuff that we do in the podcast, man. And then putting it out. It's really starting to really, you know, create some momentum here.
Yeah. I heard we were like the number 10 pod in Uganda or something like that, man.
Uganda. We're number 10 in Uganda. We're number 33 in Greece and number 37 in the Philippines.
Okay. And the Philippines
is Philippines.
Basketball crazy. We got to talk about Billy Ray Banks.
Hey, I need to get down to the Philippines, bro.
Yeah, they call him the black something over there. I forgot what
with the big calves? With the big calves?
Billy Ray Banks, yeah.
With the big calves?
Yeah, yes. Played with the Blazers and came in. He was like Joe Hardy.
Black Superman.
Black, is that what it is? Black Superman down there in the Philippines. You got kind of banned from the NBA, alcohol, drugs, went to the Philippines, averaged 50 a game. But he was like this spectacular. Do you remember Richard Dumas from Phoenix? He was kind of that Richard Dumas type character that just kind of came in, dominated, turned his stuff out, and then left as soon as he came in. Deuces out of here. Anyway, about that action, speaking of somebody coming in, speaking of deuces. Double deuces, Chris Middleton. Gone from the Bucks, the guy that's replaced him, Kyle Kuzma, a guy, Chris, that you know really well. You worked him out along with Clint Parks the earlier part of his career. Clint told me he's still working with him during the offseason, and a guy whose footwork I've always loved and enjoyed. So let's take a look at some Kuz clips and just kind of break them down as we go into about that action. Here we go. All right, so here's Kuz coming off a little dribble handoff. And man, and so this is what I like about him.
It's unbelievable.
The amphibious nature. No, he's ambidextrous. He knows how to use both hands around the basket. He's really good with that left.
It just adds a different dynamic to the Bucks lineup when you got a 6'9" guy.
Yeah.
That can come off a dribble handoff, attack with the left, finish, score. Like that's what I was kind of talking about when we first broach this subject about Kuz. Check him out right there. Nice use of the body. Yeah. Way to, you know, shield his body away from the man. But it's one dribble, two dribble. Nice. Three, Rudy Gobert. See, Kuz, man, I was trying to tell folks that Kuz's skill set, like his size, athleticism, and skill set is extremely unique. It took Bucks fans a little while to understand that, like a couple games. But I think they're starting to come around. When I'm looking at Twitter, he's getting some positive feedback. The game where they've just beat the Timberwolves without Giannis and Dame, they put on a heck of a show.
Ooh,
the two, KPJ, Kuz, I mean, the whole team, but when you watch Kuz, and I'm talking to the Bucks fans, you watch Kuz and KPJ, right? And you think about when we had Chris, DeLon, and all these guys, you see as basketball people, because I respect Bucks fans as basketball people, you see there's a different vibe, a different energy, and there's a different level of skill when KPJ's bringing the ball up. Go ahead, MJ.
Well, no, just quick. I mean, it just looks quicker. It looks more athletic. It looks more fluid. And Kuz, same hand, same finish. Watch him jump off that left foot finish with the left hand.
That's nasty.
That gives him a bigger shield on Rudy Gobert. So, yeah, that's good. Let's move on. I mean, but Kuz, I just love that play, that little curl coming off that DH over Brook Lopez. Now, watch the defense right there. Now, you know, nothing spectacular, but just being in the right position, battling, fighting, slides over, makes it difficult.
He was about to take a charge.
Oh, he was there. He was there.
He was about to.
Ant-Man wanted to
come. Check him out. Check him out. Look, he's trying to cover the jewels.
Yeah, yeah. The Ant-Man wanted to come in and possibly throw down a dunk if he's not there in time, but he's there, and you force a tough pass, tough catch, you force a miss. So great defensive possession. All right, moving on. But just that's a little bit of a defense, just mindset and awareness by Kyle Kuzma. Now watch this, push. The ability to push it up the floor at 6'9", 6'10", crossover, kick.
Bruh, let's go back. So look, let's count dribbles. Let's see where Kuz is. He's literally 94 feet away. One, two, and three.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
He got three dribbles to the free throw line and delivered the ball on a string, super dime. Like this is, and he had a dunk this game too that he took in full court. He went coast to coast basically, but like, you know, beating people. Like that is something that I haven't seen from a guy on the Bucks roster at 6'9". I don't know who can do, and maybe I'm missing somebody, MJ, but like Kuz is one of the most different guys I've seen in the Bucks uniform for his versatility, ability to do this, and he hasn't even been knocking down threes at any type of rate. That's the part that I love what he's done. Also, last thing on this, he's kind of adapted his game and really focused on his strengths since he's joined the Bucks roster. So he's not just jacking them shots. Everybody was talking about that he was going to jack, that he was jacking down in Washington. Like we said, he's in a championship situation, so he's going to alter his game, adapt and adjust to championship-type plays, and that's one of them right here.
Yeah, that's a beautiful job, beautiful delivery. And as Doc talked about, when you got a guy like that who will push it, get it out of trouble, give it up early, it makes the guys run. Gary Trent Jr. sprints down to that left corner for that three-point shot. You watch him. He's gone. He's gone.
He knows.
Look at it. He knows. Right there. He's got his hands. I'm ready. Boom, right on the string, bottom.
Hey, let's shout out GTJ real quick, man. I got to give a shout out to Gary Trent Jr., man. That dude has been balling. Remember that slump he went through, MJ?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You love when a guy like that goes through that type of slump, keeps his head up, still stays locked in, and then the basketball guys are rewarding him. Now he's balling.
And not only just
out of control,
but not only just catching shit. He's off the bounce. He's sidestepping. He's you know, step back and he's mid range and his floaters were not falling early. But I could see that
he had them.
He had confidence in it. They just weren't going down for him. Now all that stuff is going down. It's a beautiful thing to watch. Let's go to KPJ if you want. Okay, Kevin Porter.
Let's just watch him off the bounce. Use it. Just understanding the nuance. The nuances is of understanding how to use a screen.
Yeah,
right on pick and roll.
But and a lot of this stuff is late second half, fourth quarter type stuff when the Bucks, you know, needed to sustain their lead. When I think the Timberwolves might have tied the game up at one point. They had the momentum, but Doc had enough trust in this young man, the newly acquired, just acquired Kevin Porter Jr., to have him on the floor.
Yeah,
you know, in net cutting time, as my old Bucks coach John Killalay used to say, but in crunch time, he was out there and he was making things happen, Chris.
Yeah, making things happen on the bounce. Kevin Porter Jr. gives the Bucks a really different dynamic, a big ball handling, sweet, shifty, lengthy guard, right, that can create his own shot earlier in this game, man, he was hitting dudes with some step backs. He was getting in between, you know, kind of a mid-range and, you know, kind of. But what I love is his ability to use these ball screens. Like the Bucks outside of Dame, right, you don't have anybody that uses them at a high level like KPJ. Like I said, when we first got him, I felt like he was going to be running the point. Like he's a facilitator, creator. Like, you know, we had conversations about the wing. But to me, he's a guy you can count on. The more comfortable he gets. I read our guy, Jim Orzarski?
Ozarski.
Jim Orzarski's article about KPJ. And one thing that stood out was KPJ kind of talking about how, you know, he felt welcomed by the team and Doc. And, he's a guy that values the camaraderie. And I think that's just – he's one of these kids that, you know, you might have some trouble in his past. But he needs love. Like, if the Bucks can show him that love, the vets can mentor him. Like, they have a serious long-term gem on their hands if you can get through to this kid.
Yeah. There's a term, Hosinu. It means to mold like clay.
Yes,
and this is what Hosinu. They got to do some Hosinoing on this young man. And I'm into basketball etymology, you know, get linguistic etymology, but where a guy comes from. So now he was in Seattle. Mom wanted him to go to O'Day High School, Clint Richardson, some other great players out of there. He wanted to go where his dad went to school. Like you went to Crenshaw, like I went to Crenshaw, like everybody else in his family went to Crenshaw at some point in time. Josiah for a couple of years, Josh Mariah. He wanted to go to Rainier Beach High School. He played for Mike Bethea, who has been there forever, one of the greatest high school coaches nobody's really heard a lot about, but he's coached so many. I mean, between Terrence Williams and Doug Christie and Nate Robinson. I mean,
Crawford?
Jamal Crawford. That's the first one from the first game I did for the Martin Luther King Holiday Hoop Fest was Jamal Crawford, 6'5", point guard. But DeJounte Murray, all these Rainier Beach dudes, man, and they have a family type environment where they take care of each other. Jamal Crawford mentored Kevin Porter Jr. I think we got another clip of KPJ. We can move off of this one. I mean, he's hit that jumper so many times, he's going to drop another 50 like he did against us two years ago.
I can watch it forever. Look at that ball manipulation.
Yeah.
So that's ball manipulation.
And he's running the point. He's running the one. And I didn't really know he had that ability right there.
Yeah, Junior wants it. Well, he's like we talked about though, Em, he's an NBA PG, right? Because like, you know, he can get it up the floor and he can create off pick and roll. In transition, he can find guys. He court maps. He can find you. Like he needs to stay locked into this mode.
Right.
Like when he starts to get out of this mode is when you start to have the problems with Kevin Porter Jr. Like, and you saw it during the game. Like everything wasn't great. You know, there are some points, there's some moments in the game where he's putting his head down. He walked off the court, kind of walked off the bench, kind of surly, salty because he was coming out the game. But that's part of the process when you're dealing with a talented dude, 25 years old. Like I'm willing to deal with that. When you got a guy like this coming in the game, man.
Well, and understand the mindset. And you were like that as a player, too. But why is he walking off the floor? Because he wants to be out there.
Because he wants to play.
He knows he can impact winning. Y'all want to win this game or what? You leave me on the floor. And you talked about that. Look what he just twists Joe Ingles up. Ingles thinks he's going to bounce pass. He sticks his leg out to kick
but
the
everybody,
ball.
But everybody twists Joe Ingles up, man. Joe Ingles was looking suspect in this game last night, bro. He looked all of 37. Novak was giving him a hard time. I thought he was 47 the way he looked. No offense, Joe.
Okay, we got another KPJ. Is that it? Look, I think we got one more KPJ. I think that tough.
The midi? Defense. Check him out. On Ant.
Great defense on Ant. Yeah, right.
On Ant. Damn.
And this is a big play down the stretch of that game. They're trying to isolate KPJ against the Ant-Man. Ant-Man usually is reliable on this type of situation. You see him he holds the hands up like he thinks it's going down. Yeah. But KPJ just does enough on the contest. Watch this contest.
Early
contest.
He read the move. It was like you used to do to me when we used to play one-on-one back in the day. You knew all my moves. It's the same situation right here.
Right.
He's already reacted to the sidestep right a split second earlier, which is why he was able to get that. That tells me he's locked in. Yeah. And he wanted to guard Anthony Edwards all game. He's not scared. That's something else that he brings to the table, MJ.
Yeah, competitive.
He's not scared. And look at
fearless,
him.
Fearless.
And something else I saw during the game, earlier in the game, Anthony Edwards was hitting a couple threes trying to get off. Gary Trent Jr.
took it upon himself to match Anthony Edwards' energy on that stuff, on the, on those looks, on that vibe of like, oh, you go try to celebrate and be all up and you be turned up. Well, I'm gonna be turned up with you on some crazy. And my dad in the stands too, bro, with the mink on. So now what?
And my people, I'm from the Minneapolis. You know, this is home, boy. Yeah, this is home, bro.
And
that's what it felt like. That's great stuff. So anyway, that's enough out of that, man, about that action. So you saw Kyle Kuzma, what he's going to bring to the table. And no, he's not Chris Middleton. This is the shot here, I think, this is his nice little take, little fade. You know,
deceleration
over Rudy Gobert. This is a big shot. This helped the Bucks again sustain that lead or give them the lead. This is late in the game. Nice take. Little fade back. Ank, ank.
Again, pick and roll mastery, right? The ability to use these screens, knows where to go. Look, see the hesitation. Let's do it again. Let's go back. This is what I mean by the nuances of pick and roll. Watch this hesitation, and then it goes. Yeah. So that little hesitation, you know, he's advanced. Like, you have other guards that were on the Bucks roster, DeLon Wright, AJ Green. Like, them guys aren't making that play.
Yeah.
So this adds so much. Now, those guys, like, you know, your AJ and Gary, now they could be shooters. They could be spot uppers. Now you got a ball handling, crossing dude on a high level, man. I'm telling you, like, this is a big deal. Yeah. Kevin Porter Jr. is a big deal, a big addition. Deal. I don't care what anyone says. This dude's a big deal. He's going to add value to this Bucks team.
I believe that at both ends of the floor too. And man, I've always liked it. Well, you know, he gave us he's the youngest player in the history of the NBA to give a team 50 and 10 assists at 22 years old. Anytime you can give a team 50, he gave us 50 when he was in Houston. I don't care. You know what I mean?
I care, but it's like, come on. Like, you know, this guy can play.
He can play. He threw out the word grace. And that's what, as fans, as Buck lovers, I mean, we've got to show him some grace.
A little bit of grace.
And allow him, like you said, this clean slate to prove who he is right now. He's a young man with 24, 25, 26 years old. Come on. Yeah, he's just starting to figure out who he is. And yes, he's made some mistakes, but now he's ready to change his life around and to contribute to this team. So I'm just excited about where these guys are in terms of men in their lives and their career. And I think this is the perfect time for them to be with this solid Milwaukee Bucks crew that can mentor them and guide them and show them love, as you talked about earlier. And it's just going to be exciting to see what they can offer. But anyway, I'm excited about what we had to offer today. Chris Haynes, thank him again. Check out that Dame Lillard doc that's coming out, a four-part series.
On Bucks Plus Audio. And it's on, but the Dame doc is done by Bucks Plus Audio, our producers, our crew. Work with Chris. This is an in-house production, man, so I'm excited to watch a four-part series. They spent a lot of time, blood, sweat, and tears on this, and it's off the hook. I don't know if you saw the trailer, MJ, but it's pretty good.
I saw little snippets of it. John Horace and Doc Rivers and all the Buck execs talking about Dame.
Very good.
And just Dame is quickly becoming one of my favorite NBA kind of personalities because of the multifaceted things that he's, the music, and then just the you know, I got a screenplay that I'm going to give to his agent. I want him to star as one of these original black firemen back in the 50s. He's got that energy.
That dude is hilarious. Hey, that dude is a funny human being too, without even trying. Like, he has a great sense of humor. Like, I'll just say that.
Yeah, he does. So, but anyway, we had a great show here at District. Fantastic voyage continues on, and man, what a the course has been altered. There's been a change of direction. Somebody got on the wheel and took us instead of due north, we're going due northwest now. Okay, a little slightly different direction, but it's all good. Headed toward the ultimate goal, I believe, and that's this team being the best version of itself, whatever that means, however that shakes out. So, here at District, Marcus Johnson, Chris Johnson, we're out of here.
Peace.
This has been a Bucks Plus Audio production.